Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. As we mentioned a little earlier in the show, there's just 1 week to go until the state's party primaries. We've heard from all the gubernatorial candidates, and you can listen to those interviews at radioboston.org. But this week, we're going to hear from candidates in the race that has really galvanized Democrats in particular, and that's the race for Attorney General. We'll talk with former Assistant AG Maura Healey on Thursday, but today, Warren Tolman joins us in the studio. Tolman served in the Massachusetts House and Senate for 8 years. He ran for lieutenant governor in 1998 and for governor in 2002. Warren Tolman, welcome to Radio Boston.
Nice to be with you, Meghna. Thank you for inviting me.
It's great to have you. So first of all, I would love to start with getting to have listeners get to know you a little better because you've got a great bio. You are the seventh of eight kids, grew up in Watertown. I'm wondering if growing up with such a big family was good preparation for politics.
Sometimes it was, Meghna. You know, my mom and dad actually started our family in Fidelis Way Housing Project, Federal Housing Project in Boston, moved over to Watertown. And you know, the funny thing was when I went to college, I would put toothpaste on my toothbrush and leave the bathroom. And my friends started asking me, why are you doing this? I realized with 10 people in the house, and I grew up in Watertown in one bathroom, I had to get the heck out of the bathroom real quickly. It was prime territory. So you did what you had to do and you get out of there. So, no, my parents, my dad was a railroad conductor. My mother was a telephone switchboard operator, taught us some very important lessons. They didn't have a lot of financial means, but taught us about working hard, about standing up for what you believe in, and about listening to people. And those were all very good skills when I went to the legislature, mm-hmm. when I tried to get things done on Beacon Hill in my 8 years up there. And frankly, sometimes when I stood up against the tobacco industry or stood up against the legislative leadership, sued Tom Finneran, took on Bill Bulger, and banned smoking in the State House over the objections of a chain smoking center president. Those weren't easy things to do, but they were lessons that my mom and dad instilled in us.
Well, you were also the first of your siblings or the first member of your family as a whole to go to college.
That is correct.
How significant was that for you and your family?
You know, I was blessed, Meghna, in that I had six older siblings who, while they didn't graduate from college or anything, they pushed me. They pushed me to do my homework. They pushed me to try to stay on the right side of things, if you will. And I had a number of great teachers in the Watertown Public Schools who encouraged me. People took me under the wing, my sports coaches. And, you know, I my senior year, my football coach said, Warren, I want you to think about Amherst or Williams. And to be candid, Meg, I didn't even know Amherst or Williams. I didn't know what they were even. So it was then to have been accepted to both of them a few months later was pretty good, and decided on Amherst because I was dating a woman at Watertown High School, and it was an easier hitchhike home from Amherst. And she's now my wife of 27 years, so I made the right call. But it was different. It was a little bit of a culture shock, but it was a great experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Now, your other siblings, you said your dad was, he worked for the railroad, and I think almost all of your other siblings ended up doing so too.
Yeah, my four older brothers, I had one brother who died at a very young age, unfortunately, and my four older brothers all went to work for the railroad.
Yeah. And why didn't you end up working for the railroad?
Because
other than the college route, of course.
Yeah, it was the college route. It was definitely, and you know, after I graduated from Amherst, I took a year and tried to save some money and had been accepted to law school, but I couldn't go directly because, you know, the cupboard was bare, if you will. So I had to save some money, drove a UPS truck for 8 months, taught in the Watertown Public Schools, and, you know, just tried to save money for my college education. And then my law school education went to BC Law on, mm-hmm. on loans and grants and scholarships and all that stuff and what money I could save. And, you know, here I am.
So politics and law gained a good man, but maybe the railroads think that they lost a good man.
Well, they had four, they had five, including my dad. So they did all right.
Did all right with the Tolmans. Yeah. Okay. So ultimately, after law school, I mean, you did end up spending quite a while later, 8 years in the state legislature. So what turned you to politics to begin with?
You know, when I was a young boy, Meghna, I actually saw my dad, who was a union leader in his own right, fighting to keep the commuter rail alive on the Boston to Framingham line. And they were going to do away with it at the time. And I remembered it. You know, I was 10 or 12 years old. I remember seeing my dad coalesce commuters, his co-workers, and with legislators. And I saw that, you know, politics was a way to accomplish good goals. And I, you know, at the time I was watching, you know, my passions were the Red Sox, and then it became a little bit of the politics. So I started following it more closely and really grew to love the notion that you could make a difference in people's lives. And I know, as a result of my work on domestic violence, for instance, Meghna, that, you know, women are, you know, are safer because of my address confidentiality law that I wrote that prevents people, batterers, from finding out where a woman moved as a result of her moving out of the person's house or the like, or even the tobacco industry, taking on big tobacco and beating them at a time long before it was popular. Actually, my mom, my dad, my aunt who lived with me, all died within 5 months of each other from smoking-related illnesses. Mm. And then I was going out trick-or-treating 2 weeks after my dad had died. He was the third. And my son was dressed up as a cowboy, and he was 5 years old at the time. He said, "Dad, all cowboys smoke, right?" And I said to myself, I remember it vividly as if it was yesterday, I said, you know, they got my mom, they got my dad, they got my Aunt Norma. They're not going to get my son, too. And so I went after the tobacco industry, and the American Cancer Society would later send me around the country to teach other legislators. And American Heart Association gave me their Statesman of the Year award. And one other radio talk show host, Rush Limbaugh, attacked me on national radio. He called me an anti-smoking Nazi. And so judge me by my enemies. But it was that notion, Meghna, that you can make a difference. And I know kids aren't smoking as a result of that effort.
Right. So this is what leads me to ask you about why run for the AG's office now, because you've obviously had a lot of deep experience on Beacon Hill. You ran for both lieutenant governor and governor as well. These are all legislative positions. The AG's, the Office of Attorney General is not a legislative office. I mean, it's an elective office, but it's not one where you're writing new laws. You're rather prosecuting them or defending them, et cetera. So why run for attorney general now?
Well, I wasn't planning on running, Meghna, and the Marathon Bombers came to my house in April of, came to my neighborhood in April of 2013. And, you know, when you have the SWAT team come through your house, when you're standing there at the top of your basement stairs, as I was with my 15-year-old daughter, and there's guys in your basement, and you hear one of them yell, "Door open right," and you see the guns turned to the right, and you think, my goodness, they're ready to put their life on the line for me and my family. It started at 53. I started thinking, what's my role? What am I doing? Am I, you know, I liked the fact that I made a difference in years past. And that was April. I didn't know where it was going to take me. But in October, when Martha Coakley decided to run for governor, Frank Bellotti called me up, the father of the modern attorney general's office. And a couple days later, Scott Hushbarger called me up, another former AG. By the way, I've been endorsed by all four living Democratic attorney generals, former attorney generals.
Well, you ran as lieutenant governor under the Hushbarger ticket.
I did. And so both of them, Scott and Attorney General Bellotti, the message was, you got to do this. This is a perfect place for you to use your leadership skills to move this office in a positive, progressive way to lead the people of Massachusetts. And when I started to think about it, and when I looked at the breadth and the impact one could have from the Attorney General's office, you know, I started to get excited, and I started to think about that opportunity to make the difference. And this goes to a fundamental difference, I believe, and the Globe has alluded to this several times, about the way I perceive the office versus my opponent. I mean, it certainly, you know, there's a place to investigate, there's a place to prosecute, there's a place to do those things. But I believe it's more than that. I believe you need to be a proactive progressive. My vision is broader, a lot broader.
Well, I mean, just to specifically sort of clarify what you're talking about, I mean, your opponent, Maura Healey, who served as assistant AG, has basically leveled this criticism at you. I mean, I'm looking at a quote from her from not that long ago. She said that you see the office of AG as legislator-in-chief, public policymaker-in-chief, and that you, Warren Tolman, don't have the experience in the courtroom making investigations, that your experience is out of Beacon Hill. I mean, to her point, the AG is the state's chief law enforcement officer, not chief lawmaker.
Absolutely right. And I'm not looking at this as the legislator-in-chief. And for 13 years, I was a litigator at Burns & Levinson, one of the top trial litigation firms in the state. So, you know, unfortunately, there's a propensity to take things out of context from time to time. And what's clear is I do have a record, and there will be lots of great opportunities for the attorney general to go in the courtroom. I frankly think there'll be fewer and far between than the rule rather than the exception. But when that opportunity presents itself, so I'm clearly been in there enough. I've done my courtroom work. But what's more important is to lead. And I look at some of the issues, seemingly intractable issues that, in my opinion, my opponent had an opportunity to lead on but chose not to. And one's prospective and one's retrospective. The prospective one is about gun violence and the use of mandating smart gun technology on new guns. This is the fingerprint trigger locks that will save lives and cut down on gun trafficking. She supports it, but wants the legislature to act. And in my opinion is, we saw the power of the legislature, the gun lobby a few weeks ago when they watered down a good gun bill in the House of Representatives in Massachusetts.
But they got something passed, though. I mean, a lot of people would say that's better than nothing being passed
right.
at all.
And if you think, if you're going to wait around for them to get smart gun technology through, then, you know, we'll be waiting a long, long time. But this is something that the Attorney General of Massachusetts can do unilaterally under existing law. The regs were passed in 1997 regulating guns in Massachusetts. This is an updating of them, pure and simple. And by the way, that controlled in 1997 the load mechanism that one, the strength that one would have to pull a gun trigger. It's exactly on point with what I want to do.
So you think that the existing statutes allow for smart gun technology? Because I think Maura Healey says she's not entirely sure that that's true.
She's not. She doesn't want to do it. She wants to do it by legislature. It's clear. In fact, not only is it clear, in my opinion, but there's an SJC decision from 1999 on this specific point, which when the gun industry challenged the original reg. So it's quite clear to me. I get that people don't want to take on their NRA. I get, you know, frankly, people didn't want to take on big tobacco. But I'm willing to do it because every hour of every day, somewhere in America, a young child is injured as a result of a gun accident. And this technology was developed in Massachusetts, yet it's not available. You can buy it in Europe. Smith & Wesson developed it. You know, what kind of constraint on the Second Amendment is it when gun manufacturers are developing this technology?
Well, let's take a step back for a second, because this issue of the difference in what the vision for the AG's office is at the core of your race with Maura Healey here. And I'm wondering, it's not just about leadership and, as you've talked about being an advocate, being a progressive and showing leadership on certain issues. But I return to this idea that the Attorney General is the state's chief law enforcement officer and the chief lawyer for the Commonwealth as well. So what might happen, say, if as Attorney General, a case comes into your office where you are obliged to defend the Commonwealth? Say it's a case that's challenging certain laws that you don't necessarily think the Commonwealth itself is on the right side of history on, but you'd be the state's top lawyer. You'd have to do that. How would you handle that?
No, you don't have to do it. And in fact, there's
lots of
precedent.
Well, you could decline.
You absolutely can. They're entitled to representation, but they're not entitled to representation by the Attorney General's office. And there's case law on this. Attorney General Bilotti chose not to represent the state when they went after him, well, when they tried to take a foster child away from two gay parents when they found out two gay men had adopted a child. And he said, look, I'm going to, you're entitled to representation, but I don't have to represent you. And frankly, I wouldn't have done it then. I think Attorney General Bilotti was right. And frankly, I wouldn't have done it with the DCF issue, where I believe the most vulnerable citizens in our Commonwealth ought not to have the protection of the Attorney General. These are the kids that have no one looking out for them, Meghna. And as Attorney General, I would have tried to resolve that issue before it percolated up and became a piece of litigation. But I know I couldn't have found in my heart the commitment to represent DCF well, so I would have chose not to do it. Because so there are going to be instances like that. And by the way, the issue of on-campus sexual assault, where a woman today is more likely to be the victim of sexual assault if she goes to college than if she doesn't, is crying out for leadership. We are the epicenter of public higher education, of private and public higher education in the world. And yet, my opponent led this division and did nothing on it. And frankly, you know, I have a daughter I dropped off at BC on Friday. I can't look her in the eyes knowing that I'm not doing anything as the chief law enforcement officer of the Commonwealth. If I'm not doing everything possible to try to make those campuses safer, teach about bystander intervention. Look at, you know, my opponent talks about forensic evidence. It's not about forensic evidence. It's about prevention. It's about teaching appropriate behavior. And that's where the AG's office comes in.
Would you you require universities and colleges to automatically report cases of sexual assault to local law enforcement then?
They're absolutely automatically required today under the federal CLERI reporting requirements. Now, remember, a person who is assaulted has the prerogative to decide whether to report that, that he or she, and it's primarily, though not exclusively, women that are victims of sexual assault, has the choice to go outside of the campus judicial system if she or he wants. So,
but would you take it a step further and say that that it should automatically go outside the campus judicial system?
I think that's up to the person, to the victim. I'm not going to insinuate my own intentions into that. But what I want to do is I want to teach about prevention. I want to teach it. There are lots of good programs. My own alma mater, Amherst College, had a very difficult chapter several years ago. And they did some great things, implemented some terrific things. My son was there at the time. They had an all-campus summit for 7 hours where they talked about these issues, broke off into groups. My son told me it was one of his best days in 4 years at Amherst College. There's a lot of young men and women that can learn from these experiences and can be proactive in preventing their friends from getting assaulted and protecting and making campuses safer. That's what a good leader does. Is that, you know, is there a specific chapter that says that the Attorney General should do X, Y, Z? No. But I'm going to lead. I'm going to use my leadership skills in a powerful way to say, look, we got a crisis. I got another 16-year-old coming up, and she's going to college, too. And I'm going to make sure that whether it be my daughters or anybody else's daughters or nieces or nephews, that we can make these campuses safer, mm-hmm. and I'm going to do everything I can to do so.
A couple more quick questions for you before I know we have to let you go. Do you think there's a risk in your vision of the Attorney General's office making the AG's office too politicized? I mean, I know to a certain degree it is a political office because you got to get elected to it. But there's a difference between that and politicizing the purpose of the Attorney General's office.
Look, there's two offices that have led the country for many, many years, California and the United and Massachusetts Attorney General's office in the entire United States. If you accuse me of politicizing the office for making campuses safe from on-campus sexual assault, if you accuse me of politicizing the office for dealing with the opiate scourge that's out there, if you accuse me of politicizing the office for reducing gun violence and making our community safer, so be it. I'm doing my job, in my opinion. You're the chief law enforcement officer of the Commonwealth. If you can have an impact on some of these issues that are out there, my goodness, I think it's malpractice for you not to do so.
Okay, final question for you. We found an old article in the Boston Globe that listed a couple things that maybe a lot of people don't know about you, and
Uh-oh.
The one I was taken with the most was that you can basically talk your way into events without having a ticket. I read that you talked your way into the 86 World Series and President Clinton's inaugural ball. So give us some tips on how you got that done.
God, that was a long time ago. I wanted to go to the World Series, and, you know, they didn't happen a lot. And the Red Sox lost, unfortunately, but it was my birthday, and I decided that this would be a fun thing to do. So I basically was able to talk to someone who felt bad for this young guy that wanted to see a Red Sox game. And I think I had tickets to the Clinton inaugural. I don't know where you got that one, but
okay.
That one I think I was okay on. But
so you worked the sympathy angle for the World Series.
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the time I thought it was, you know, we were going to win and it was going to be a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Thank God John Henry and company came to town, and my friend Dan Duquette, in my opinion, laid the groundwork, and here we are. Three titles in the last 10 years. Pretty good record.
All right. Well, I'll try to keep that in mind next time I need to talk my way into something.
All right.
Warren Tolman is running for Warren Tolman is trying to become the Democratic nominee for the Office of Attorney General. Again, the primary is 1 week away. Mr. Tolman, thanks so much for joining us.
Nice
to be with
you, Amanda. Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, we'll talk about the surprising results when a college practiced grade deflation. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.